right. That's right. You said that.
A little more water, a little more garlic powder.
Right. Right. Okay. Okay. Rav Shmuel. Okay. Two great contemporaries, very often at odds with each other, but sometimes they're in agreement also. So he says, Amritav Aihu, both of them are in agreement, saying, Kol Isurin Shebat Torah. Whatever prohibited mixtures you have in the Torah, so b'minon b'mashuhu, if it's the same substance, then it's prohibited by the slightest amount, as we said, and shelo b'minon, but if not, two different substances, then the nice thing time, right? Right. So, of course, this is what the Mishnah had to say. So they say, Zehaklal, Mesuye Maya. Okay, the Mishnah says this is the general rule. So the question is, what are we adding as a result of it? So he says, La Suye, Kol Isurin Sheba Torah. The answer is to apply it to everything prohibited in the Torah. Of course, I'm talking about prohibited, prohibited mixtures. Right. Okay. Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, Dami Tavaihu, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yochanan, they said jointly, Kol Isurin Sheba Torah Bein Miminon Bein Shelo Miminon. They say whatever is prohibited in the Torah, whether it's a mixture of the same substance or whether it's a mixture of, you know, of a different substance, you judge on the basis of what? The nosein tam. In other words, the nosein tam doesn't affect the taste, that's a question of quantity, as we said. These are the factors that you have to consider. But notice, they go a step further than Rav and Shmuel, because Rav and Shmuel said what the Mishnah had to say, okay? Whereas they're adding that it would make no difference whether it's min b'mino or min b'she'eno mino. Makes no difference.
Whatever it is,
you go on that basis. Right.
Similar substance.
Right.
Two different ones.
Right. Right.
Make
right.
So what it does go by has to do with the, does it affect the taste?
Right. Right. Yes. Right. Right. Which we said, the mashu, if there's something prohibited, you can't tell apart what is the prohibited substance from the non-prohibited. You understand? If I would take Yai Nesa and pour it into kosher wine, are you going to see a difference between them?
No.
That's why I don't understand how they apply.
So that's why they say that since you can't tell the difference between them, then the Isur, it's prohibited. It's prohibited for Masha. Okay? And this is the point that the Mishnah made, and this is the point also the Rav and Shmuel maintain what the Mishnah had to say. But the revolution is what? Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. Right.
What I want to ask you,
okay. When they say nosein tam, it implies not just a question of taste, but implies, as we learned, also a question of quantity. Okay. So in this particular case, the factor really would be the quantity.
How would that apply? Why would that make a difference if it's all mine? Why would it make a difference?
You're right. This is why it's a little hard to understand what they're doing, but obviously they're being much more liberal in their interpretation of what the general rule is than
the
Mishnah itself.
So if they know that a
thimble
fell into a cask,
right.
So the amount is so infinitesimal, it will not affect you.
Right.
Didn't matter anything.
Well, originally it said anything.
Yeah.
But the more liberal view has to do with
But the right. That the rule is?
Well, generally speaking, we adhere to that the Bimim Bimino is also even today. In other words, we would pass it more like what the Mishnah had to say.
Right.
But since we don't have Yai Nesach these days,
it
doesn't really. I mean, and I don't know. Maybe even, let's say, in the case of a goyish wine, I don't mean, you know, what we call Stam Yenon.
Yeah.
The kind of wine that you could get in the supermarket. Or
Gallows.
Maybe. Gallows, let's say.
Right.
Okay, all right.
Not
if that was mixed with Manischewitz. I don't know what it would taste like, but, but maybe in that particular case, you would go on the basis of how much Gallows and how much Manischewitz, and see which, you know, is the Manischewitz, let's say, 60 times the amount of Gallows that fell in.
Well,
you'd have to investigate it, right, obviously.
It's not really Yai Nesach, it's Stab Yenom.
It's called Stab Yenom, right. Right. Because we learned, I mean, there's a difference. Yai Nesach is also Bamashu, right? It's prohibited. Not only is it prohibited from drinking, but also it's prohibited from selling it, getting any benefit from it, etc., etc. But it doesn't apply to Stab Yenom. You can own a liquor store, let's say, and sell Gallows wine, and that would be permitted. You don't drink it, but you're allowed to sell it. You understand?
What about just posing a hypothetical: the wine that the Catholics use in their altar?
Yes. Right. Yeah, I know. Hocus pocus. Yeah.
Okay. Hypothetically, that were poured into wine, you know, which
you couldn't make a kiddush over,
Shabbat.
Yeah,
would,
yeah. Would
that fall? I mean, I'm just stretching here, but would that fall under the rubric of
the Yai Nesach? I would say it's pretty close to it. But Chas V'Shalom, that is usually drinks.
The
sacramental
wine. Would you eat the wafer that they give out at the altar?
Yes.
Hey, what the heck, you know? I think that's the same, you have to, kind of...
I think they use kosher matzah, don't they?
No.
Supposedly. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, the Catholic Church says
they have a mafia hole looking at.
But they have to have non-yeast.
It's unleavened, right.
And on the other hand, the Orthodox, you know, Russian, Greek, etc., they insist it has to be yeast.
It has to be yeast.
It has to be yeast, right. It's one of the big points of argument between the Catholic Church and the Orthodox churches.
Right,
yeah.
Wait, say this again.
The wafer that they use for their communion. The Greek Orthodox, the Russian Orthodox, etc., the Orthodox churches say that it has to be a yeast product, okay? It has to be leavened, if you wish, okay? Whereas the Roman Catholics say that it has to be unleavened.
That's the way they say it.
Yeah, right. presumably it was supposed to be because Yoshki ate the matzah, you know, before he was executed.
All right.
Malik.
You want to go to the end of the mission, or
no, I think we're going to stop. Just those on target. Yeah, I didn't finish just a couple of lines. Okay.
What we're talking about?
Yeah.
But
they say chutz. Yeah. Okay. Right. Right. Let me finish, however, the next couple of words over there. It says, Chutz b'tevel v'yei nesach. Except for tevel and yei nesach. What is tevel? Tevel is food from which you have not yet taken meiser, trumas, and things like that, and so on.
You haven't separated.
Okay, untied. Okay?
Right.
That's tevel. And there's a... According to the Chachomim, there is it's mitzvah b'day shemayim. In other words, that if you eat it, the heavenly court is going to punish you for eating tamal.
Yes,
okay,
right. Separate the
right. It's supposed
to obligation.
Correct. So in that particular case, even Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish were more machbir. Okay, and the other area in which they were more machbir is with Yain Nesach, where they say b'minon b'mashuhu, v'shelo b'minon b'nosing tam. Okay, all right, and then they want to say v'zehaklal lasuye tevel. So why do they include tevel? I mean, with Yain Nesach we've been talking about all along, right? But why about tevel? So Tanya Kavosi the Rav Shmuel, we've learned a similar teaching, similar to what Rav Shmuel had to say. Tanya Kavosi the Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. We've also had statements, you know, that agree with Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Tanya Kavosi the Rav Shmuel, in accordance with what Rav Shmuel had to say, we have another similar statement that says, Kol Isurin Shebat Torah, whatever prohibited things in the Torah, b'minon b'mashuhu, right? If it's the same, it's prohibited b'mashuhu. Shelo b'minon b'nosin tam. And Tanya Kavosi the Rabbi Yochanan, we learn similarly in the coins of Rabbi Yochanan, the Reish Lakish, who said, Kol Isurin Shebat Torah, all the Isurin that you have in the Torah, bein b'minon, bein shelo b'minon, whether it's the similar or dissimilar substance, and at any rate, you always judge on b'nosin tam, Chutz b'tevel, except for tevel and yai nesach, b'minan b'mashehu shalom b'minan b'nosin tam. If it's the same in the case of your tevel and mashehu and yai nesach, there's similar mixtures, you know. Then in that case, even the slightest amount is prohibited. And if the dissimilar, then it's nosin tam. So I say bishlamo yai nesach. Okay, we can understand Yai Nesach. It says, Mishub Chumra Da'avedas Kechavim, right? Because of the fact that Avedas Zora, you know, is so severe a problem for the Yiddishkeit that, you know, we act, we're machbir, okay? Elo Tevel, my Tama. Yeah, how about Tevel? Why? So it says, in the case of Tevel, Kehet Tero Kach Isuro. The way it is comes becomes permitted, so it's the way it becomes prohibited. The Omar Shmuel, Shmuel said, Chita achas poteres is hakri. He says, all that you have to do is to take one sheaf of wheat, and that already takes a whole stack of wheat out of being tevel. So all you need is just one. Okay. So that therefore, if you don't take the trouble even to remove one, then in that case it should be prohibited. Right. But the Nan also we've learned Nami Hochich Lat Babe Omru Tevel Oise Bechol Shehu B'mino, right? That when does tevel affect? If it's two similar substances in tevel, okay? But shelo b'mino, but if not, then it's b'nosin tam. Okay, so we cover to the bottom of this page. And we'll talk about go. So next week we'll start with the Mishnah on Ayin Dalet. Mirtz Hashem. Well, let's see, tonight is the 23rd of January, year 2008. And we are now in the Avodah Zorah, Daf Ayin Dalet, right on the top of the page. Okay. Now, as a little preface, I have to say, again, some of this stuff sounds like we've had it before, but there's always a little difference. So, therefore, we have to take a look and see what Rashi has to say, and so on. Okay. Then, another thing we're going to discover is that even though they categorically will say that it's prohibited, but still, in certain circumstances, obviously they're looking in order to try to mitigate the prohibition. I mean, we've seen this already in the last few pages, that, you know, where the Mishnah will make a blanket statement, and then they look around, I mean, to see if there's some way to get out of the severity of what it has to say. Okay? So, the Mishnah on the top of the page begins by saying, Elo Asurin V'Yosim B'Chol Shehu. Very categorical, right? These things are prohibited by themselves, right? And at the same time, they prohibit deriving any benefit whatever from them. Okay? So, God's fine. Okay. And take a look at Rashi to point out the severity of this particular statement. It says, Elo Asurin V'Yosim B'Chol Shehu, right? He says, "Kol mokom shenis orvu sham, wherever they are mixed in, afilo echad bi elef lo batel. Even if it's one part to a thousand, it's not nullified, right?"
You're doing the Mishnah now?
No, I'm doing that Rashi right now. The Yosvin es kulot, and they prohibited everything. Okay, so one of these things that are very, very prohibitory. All right, first of all, what do you think at the head of the list? Yain Nesach. Okay, right. And also, Ma'avedes Kechavim. Idolatry, an idol. Which, in this particular case, all right, so, back to Rashi, okay? Because with Rashi, we understand this Mishnah a little bit better. Yain Nesach, that's towards the end of the second line of Rashi, it says, Chovis be elef chavirs. It says, if you have one barrel mixed in with a thousand barrels, El Samaisa, a barrel of Yain Nesach mixed in with a thousand, and automatically what do you have to do with the thousand? Lafa Ois, right, okay, no good. This is what the Mishnah says. Now obviously, they're going to see if they can somehow mitigate this, okay. The Oros Lubuvim. This we've had before. This is an animal. You have to pick up the hide of the animal. And what do? You discover that in the area where the heart of the animal is, there's a great big hole over there. Because what did they do, right?
Shot of spears or what have you, arrow?
No. Actually, it was cut out. In other words, they would cut out the heart and sacrifice it. I mean, it reminds me of what you read about the Aztecs, the Mayans, and so on. I mean, they would do the same thing with human beings.
Yeah.
That they would cut out their hearts and use them as a sacrifice. You know. So, only the Jews didn't do it with that. The goyim that the Jews came in contact with, they didn't do it to human beings, but they did it to animals, okay, that they used as a sacrifice. So, obviously, this is associated also with a form of Avodah Zorah, obviously. Avodah Zorah. So, that being the case, it is prohibited. Now, again, Rashi, okay, says, okay. First of all, Avedis Zorah. What does it mean that second woman says, you know, after Yaidesa said Avedis Zorah, Kechovim, whatever, it says, Surisha Vaduhu, Vidis Avra, the Elif Surisha, Idas Kechovim. You have a Geshka, an idol, right? A Geshka. You heard the word Geshka, Mamaloshin. No, you never heard it.
No,
you're implying that's a small catch.
That was a term that they used in Europe to refer to the statues that they found that they saw in the churches over there. They were Getchkas, okay. So, you have a Getchka, which was served, it was worshipped as an idol, okay? And there are a thousand other Getchkas that were never served. So there it is, mixed in with the others. You understand, we're talking mixtures over here, okay? So, again, Rashi says, same thing applies. In other words, one in a thousand, and you have to throw out all the idols, even though they've never been worshipped even, okay? course, we did make a distinction way, way back. For example, a statue of a king. The Romans used to consider their kings as deities, right? The Greeks too, to a certain extent. So, if it was served, if they actually held, they worshipped it, then in that particular case, it's an idol, it's a Venusaura. But if it's there only, we learned, just to make the place look more beautiful or something like that, then in that particular case, we don't consider it as an idol. I mean, we had that way, way back, okay. All right. So, it's a similar story over here. Except that he says that if you're all mixed up, you don't know which one was worshipped. So even if there are 1,000 other idols that were never worshipped, nevertheless, no good. The Oros Levuvim, he says, these leather pieces of leather with the heart cut out, says the Habadame is Suri Hanor. He's also prohibited, for having any Hanor from it, any profit, any advantage, as we learned in the chapter in Ma'amida, that was the second chapter of the. All right. Now, the list continues.
Wait a minute, where are we now? Still on Rashi?
Back to the text. Back to the text. The Shor HaDisco. Now, what is the Shor HaDisco? There's a law in the Torah that if an ox gores a person, kills him, right? Kills the person, okay? Then in that case, what do you have to do with the ox?
Break its neck and kill
it. Yeah, well, no, you don't break its neck.
No?
No, it has to be stoned to death.
Stoned
to death. That's what this one means. Skiller, remember Skiller? Skiller, Skiller's stoning, okay. The ox has to be stoned to death. And you're not allowed to have any profit whatever from it. The point is here we're not talking about a mixture, but the point that we're talking about is simply not allowed to have profit from it. Okay. What else can't you have profit from? In other words, the ox, let's say that you wanted to cut a nice piece of meat out of the ox. Said, well, it's an avera mitzvah, right? Even though it has to be stoned to death, right? But you're not allowed to. Okay. Or the next one, Egla Rufa. Remember that one? That has to deal with a corpse is found. They don't know who murdered it. And so they measure to see near what town is the closest one. And then they have to bring it down to where there's a wild stream running. And they break the neck of the animal. And they say, that our hands have not shed this blood. Our eyes did not see, and forgive, O Lord, thy people of Israel. Okay. So, can you cut a piece of the Egla Rufa? No, can't have any Hanor whatever from it. Okay. What else? Tziporim Mitzora. Tziporim Mitzora. Those are, the Mitzora is a person who suffers from leprosy. So there's a whole ritual that has to take place when the person has finally declared that he is free from leprosy, has to come to the Beis HaMikdash, has to bring sacrifices, and some of the sacrifices consist of two birds that are alike, two doves, okay? One of them is slaughtered. The blood is mixed with hyssop and other things used in order to sprinkle over the mitzvah, and the other one is set free. Okay? Marking, so to speak, the release of the mitzvah from all the handicaps that you had. Okay. Now, can you have any hador, any prophet, whatever, out of the birds? Obviously, the birds that is dead, no. How about the one that's set free? As long as it has not yet been set free, can you take it and decide that you're going to have a nice dove dinner or something like that? Okay? The answer is no. Okay. So, that also, they have no hadar from that one. Okay.
Well, you know,
yeah.
May I just ask a question? If he has to bring the two birds,
right,
and the two birds have gone through, see, that to me, this is already understood. The two birds have already been sort of sacrificed in one, some way or another to God. I mean, it's
well, one is set free, actually, right.
One is set free.
Right.
But these are the offerings that are brought.
Yes, yeah, they're part of the offerings, so exactly.
My point
that's
of view,
right, yeah.
Since it's an offering to begin with,
yeah.
How can you even think about having a Noah from it? It already doesn't belong to you. You've made an offering of it.
It's a very good observation, because we have what they call Me'ilah. Me'ilah means trespassing, and particularly in connection with the Beis HaMikdash, it means that you make any profane use of something that has to do, that has already been consecrated.
Right.
Right, that's correct.
Oh, okay.
Right,
that's
right.
Thing,
yeah,
so
right. Right, okay, very good. Yeah. okay, next. Yeah. Next thing is Petr Chamor. Well, wait, I skipped one. Yes. Sear Nazir, the hair of the Nazirite. Remember, the Nazirite has two restrictions, actually has three restrictions, okay? Restriction number one, he's not allowed to drink wine or even to eat grapes in any form, whatever. That's the thing, right? He has to let his hair grow. He's not allowed to cut his hair, okay? Shave, cut, not allowed to do that. And of course, the third one is that he's not allowed to have contact with the dead.
With
the dead, he's not allowed to have any contact. So this is all during the time that he has this vow of becoming a nazir upon him. He's not allowed to do those three things. Okay. So what happens when the Nazir comes to the Beis HaMikdash? After the end of it, he has to bring his sacrifices also in order to get everything straightened out before he's allowed to drink wine again, which marks the end of it. So the answer is he has to shave his hair, he has to cut his hair, okay? So can you use the hair in order to make something? I mean, we know that, for example, they use hair in order to make wigs. Okay, can you use the hair of a nazir? It could be quite copious, right? In order to make a wig out of it, the answer is no. Okay, because again, you know, as we intimated, I mean, it's Kodesh Ladashem, right? Right. So therefore, we are not allowed to have any use out of that. Right. Okay. The next thing that's mentioned is Petr Chamor. We have a law in the Torah, okay, about firstborn animals, okay? Chamor is a donkey, okay. Okay, if it's a kosher animal, let's say a calf, right, a young sheep or something like that, you know, that's born first, right? So that's called a bechor, a firstborn. What is the din of a bechor? In those days, it was brought to the Beis HaMikdash, and it was given to the Kohen, who, I mean, the meal was, you know, in other words, the animal was eaten by the Kohanim, okay? You say, as if you know, a bechor, the chol haKohanim, okay? So, that's what they had to do with the bechor. Not allowed to use it for any purpose, not allowed to use it for plowing, not allowed to, if it's a sheep, you're not allowed to cut its hair and use it, you know, the wool and so on and so forth, all right. Of course, it's considered holy. Now, what if it's a donkey that is the firstborn? So the answer is, in that case, it has to be redeemed. It has to be redeemed. It has to be redeemed by an exchange of a lamb, a sheep, or something like that in its place. Okay? The imnos if there, but if you don't redeem it, then the Torah says varafto, then you have to break its neck. Okay? In other words, once, if you fail to redeem this donkey, then in that particular case, you have to kill it, and nobody can derive any benefit from it. Okay? So that's the Petah Chamor. Basa b'cholov, of course, meat which is mixed with milk. It's cooked in milk, then of course we know it's also, right? Okay. So I'm not talking about just a drop of milk that falls into the pot where you're cooking flesh or something like that, but I'm talking about where you actually cook meat in milk and so on. This is already been the rice, so it's prohibited. Okay. Well, if it's a drop, then you would have to have 60 times the amount in order to nullify it. That's correct. Okay. Yeah. And the Soya Habishtaleach. This is the scapegoat that on Yom Kippur, back in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, if you remember, they would bring it to a rock at a distance from the Beis HaMikdash and then hurl it down over there. So, once it's hurled down, could you have any advantage of it? According to the Mishnah, no. Okay. Yes.
You just said you bring him to the scapegoat is brought to a place and hurled down.
Yes.
Not set free.
No. No.
Now I always seems to me I from childhood on.
Yeah.
We learned that the goat was set free. That misconception.
No.
All this time.
No. 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 That's the service of Yom Kippur. Besides everything else, but they had to choose two goats that were alike in appearance in every way and so on, and then they cast lots.
Right.
And one of them was to be a sacrifice to Hashem,
right.
And the other one was to be the Sohar Lazazel, to, the scapegoat, okay? To carry away the sins of the people of Israel.
But he was hurled, but he was actually also killed.
Yes.
I didn't.
He was pushed off the rock.
Did you also
right.
It was set free?
No, he was pushed off the rock, and of course, the killed one by the time he came down to the bottom over there.
I never knew that.
Yeah. Not slaughtered, but pushed that way.
I understand
right,
what you're
right.
saying,
yeah.
but I never knew that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that amazing that I had this misconception. Yeah, Goldie says she did too.
Yeah, although I knew there was somewhere it was supposed to, I thought it just went off and just fell off.
Where
it was released, it was
subject
to the fall.
We learned it that we must have learned it that way.
Could be.
We must have learned it that
way. Well, if you learned it that way, it was not exactly right what they taught you. That's
right.
All.
Right. I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Goldie says maybe it reads that way in English.
What is the English? Now we could take a look.
Yeah.
All right. Get the Bible. We'll see what the text says. Okay. You want to get a Chumash?
I don't want to interfere with this lesson.
All right.
I'll look it up.
Okay. All right. So Leviticus, chapter 16.
Leviticus 16.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, it's not 16, it's 15. It's one of those chapters.
Right.
It's the service of Yom Kippur, anyway. Achrimos, okay. All right. And what else after that? And Chulin Shanishkatu Ba'azora. Okay. In the base of Mikdash, any sacrifice that had to be brought had to be sanctified. You couldn't simply take an animal and bring it in without dedicating it as a sacrifice. If it was not dedicated as a sacrifice, then this is simply its chulin. In other words, it never attained the state of holiness, and that is prohibited to be slaughtered as a sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash. It has to be dedicated. Okay. So again, you know, you're not allowed to eat chulin in the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash was meant only for sacrifices and not profane use. Okay. All right. So it says, Hare Elu Asur, this list, that is a list of things that are prohibited in themselves, we also b'chol shehu, and they prohibit in any mixture, whatever. Okay. All right, so now we're ready for the Gemara. Okay? For the Gemara. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tana Mai Kohasha. The Tana, you know, the teacher of this Mishnah, what was in his mind? What was he thinking about? Says, Ida Vishab Minyan Kohoshiv. The list they know, Chasichos, the Lelo, Yisur Hador, Koch Moshe. Okay. List they know, Chomis Pesach, and so on. Okay. So the Gemara begins by saying, what was in his mind? If he's talking about Dovah Sheba Binyan, so that already requires an explanation. What is that? Literally means something which is counted. Something which is counted. Dovah Sheba Minyan. Minyan means count over here. Okay? But, like a lot of translations, it doesn't tell you what it means, okay? What it means is that it's so outstanding in its own right. It's not just an ordinary thing, but it's something which is outstanding, okay? So there, if that's mixed in with things which are not outstanding, so the question is, then what? That's why he says, you know, that it's Osir, right? That it's prohibited also, and that in every way it's prohibited. Okay.
Does he mean like it's right. Taken for granted? Does that expression mean like?
In other words, don't take it for granted. This is an unusual thing.
Don't take
everything
it.
That we had in the list over here is really an unusual thing.
Those are all unusual.
Right, these are all unusual things. Okay? It's not the ordinary run of the mill thing. I mean, how often do we have, for example, the scapegoat,
right,
or the hair of the Nazarite, or something like that? It's a very unusual thing, you see. So this doesn't mix that well. And even in 1,000, as the Mishnah says, I mean, the Mishnah didn't say that, but as Rashi interpreted, Echad B'Yalef, no butter, right? And it's not. Okay. So what the Gemara is asking is, if that's the case, the list is not complete. Why didn't he mention some other things? As, for example, chasichos nevela. In other words, a piece of meat taken from a trefa animal. Have a piece of meat from a trefa animal, right? And you mix it with others. So what are you going to do? Well, that's also unusual. Why wasn't that listed, he says? Or what was Mr. Dami Chassid Nevela? Okay. Or Yisuri Hador Kochoshiv, right? Or if he's talking about things that you're not allowed to have, you know, any Hador at all from it, the Listen Nami Chavitz Mepesach. Chavitz Mepesach is also something that is prohibited in any way, right? Can you make chametz on Pesach kosher? No, can't. Okay, that's also kosher, right? Even the slightest amount. So why weren't they mentioned? This is what the Gemara says. So over here, Barabbas, over here, Barabbas gives the following answer. Now, there are those who say it wasn't Rabbi Chiya Barabbas, but it was Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha. Okay. Nafcha, either that was a nickname or the fact that he was a blacksmith, which is what the word means, okay? He says, Hai Tana, he says, the author of this Mishnah Tate Isli. He's actually saying that there are two disqualifications involved over here. Not one disqualification, but two disqualifications. Okay? In other words, he wants to stress things which are, first of all, they're outstanding in their own right, okay? And the other is Isuri Hador, and at the same time, also, they are prohibited. The list day, it goes a path, everybody, but on the Dovish of Aminyon, the Isuri Hanohu. So now they ask about certain types of fruits that you find in Eretz Israel. The nuts of Perach, some say that Perach is the name of a place where they grew, and others say that the word Perach means that they have a hard shell that you have to crack in order to open them. That's, for example, walnuts or something like that, okay? The word Perach, incidentally, I don't know if you remember, but we had it in Shmos in connection with what? The kind of labor that the people, that the Egyptians forced the Jews, right? It was Avodas Perach, right? Right, yeah, right.
Never
mind. Right. So, in any case, that is something which is outstanding, right? Or pomegranates of Bedan. That's also some place in Eretz Israel where the pomegranates were so unusual that, okay. Now, what happened if these nuts or these pomegranates were grown together as kilayim? Understand? Or grown with other things that were as kilayim. Remember that with plants, Kilai means that you mix up the planting over there instead of separating them, okay? So, let's say that this is... Kilai, we know, are prohibited, that's all. So, he says, all right, so why doesn't he mention them? Because they too can be outstanding, because these are considered the finest quality. And at the same time, if they are kilayim, then in that case there is also an issur. So he says, well, they were not considered the list for a different reason. Excuse me. So he says, ha tatalei hasim. As far as these walnuts or these nuts or these pomegranates are concerned, there we have a different Mishnah already that deals with that. Namely, a Mishnah in Maseches Orla, which we find, you know, in, the first Seder of the Mishnah. You know, the Mishnah is divided into Shisha Seder, okay? It's what we say, for example, at Chanukah. I mean, on Pesach, we say, talk about Shisha Sidrei Mishnah, right? Mm-hmm. The six orders of the Mishnah. Mm-hmm. So, the first order of the Mishnah contains all kinds of tractates. It has one tractate at the beginning, Brachos, which deals with prayers, blessings, Kriya Shema, etc. And then after that, you have a whole series of Masechtas dealing with every aspect of agriculture. Tithing, seventh year, Orla, although if you remember, this is that the fruit of the tree. Excuse me. You cannot use them during the first 3 years of its growth. And the fourth year they would bring it to Yerushalayim, and only really, since we don't go to Yerushalayim anymore, well, the Ramashgichim for the fields, yeah, yeah. If it's a religious community, the answer is yes. Not, I don't have to tell you, not every kibbutz is religious, okay?
Yeah. All right.
But even so, if they want to buy from them, then, you know, people in particular, they'll be careful as to what they buy, okay? So in Orlo, they are mentioned over there. So he, and he quotes over here. Tanolei Hotzal, right? You learned them over there. Maseches Orlo, he says, so Ra'ui Orlo, Orlo, Ra'ui L'Kinei Akerem, Kinei Akerem. Forgive me, my throat is bad tonight. Okay. What is good for Orlo is Orlo. What's good for Kinei Akerem? In other words, what pertains to one pertains to one, what pertains to the other pertains to the other. Kile Hakerem, yeah, right. But listen, excuse me.
Want something? Want something to drink?
Maybe.
If you have one of those candies, it would help you too.
Yeah.
I need some water. Yeah.
Make sure the moisten your throat.
Water.
So they say, and the list then is still also not complete. But this they can cover of Malabias. So they made a list, right? So they say, Lemiyute Mai, what should you exclude? He says, Lemiyute Dovashabinyan, the Lavis or Hano. In other words, the list does not include what? Things which are important in themselves, right? That's the Dovish of Binyan. But at the same time, they are not prohibited, right? Or Inami, also not included, when the Yute Yisura Hanor, things that are prohibited by having any advantage from it, but nevertheless, below Dovish of Binyan, but in themselves, they are not very important things. So the list then has been carefully selected for those things which are important in themselves and also that they are prohibited. Okay. Mela. The next Mishnah on the page, Yain Nesach Shadof Alabor, Kulei Osabadon. Okay, again, the Mishnah begins by saying Yain Nesach falls into a cistern which contains, of course, what? Kosher wine, right? So everything is prohibited from Hanor. That's what the Mishnah says, okay? So now comes Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and he says, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, he says, Yimocher kulei le'evet yechavim kutz b'dimei Yain Nesach shebo. Which means what you can do, sell the contents, you know, the wine that's in there, sell it to a goy, and you can charge him for the value of the kosher wine, but you can't charge him for the value of the Yain Nesach that came in there. So in other words, you have to deduct the amount, right?
If you know.
Right. In other words, you sell it to him at a cheaper rate than you would have if everything was kosher. Okay. So.
And that's not because the goy cares about what's kosher, but about what you can get a nor.
Right, exactly. So that, in other words, you don't have to lose every single thing
right
in the deal the way the first part of the Mishnah would indicate that you would have to. Right.
Because ordinarily you would think, what does he care what's in it? You know,
right,
he can have it both ways.
Yeah, of course.
Sell it.
Right. Okay.
What is that?
I'll go down to the bottom of this page over here. You know, the bottom of the omelet. Okay.
The
bottom of the omelet over here. Up to over here. And then we'll stop over there. In other words, we'll do Ayin Dalet Omid Aleph, but we won't do Omid Beis. We'll save that for next time. as it is. Okay. We're so close to the end already. I don't know if you realize that. But,
yeah. Because you go to a new mission after that.
Yeah. So Amar Rav. So Rav said, Halacha k'Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. He says, if Halacha follows Taka what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, namely what? That you can sell it, but deduct the amount for the Yainesa, right? Okay. And he says, this applies to Chovis b'Choviyos, avol lo Yayin b'Yayin, which would mean that if you have, let's say, barrels of wine, now we have to assume it means that the barrels are still sealed, okay? They have not been opened. But you don't remember which one contained Yainesach in it.
Which one or not.
Okay?
You didn't mark them.
You know that there's one among them, okay? So in that particular case, you can sell the whole lot, but deduct the cost of one barrel. That's what Rav is saying, okay?
You don't know which barrel it is, but you know it's one barrel.
To a non-Jew, of course, right. Of course, we don't know. You're not going to sell, not knowing whether, exactly. You don't know which one actually was the Aveda Dorot.
The barrels, and one was the Dinesic.
Right,
the
right, right.
He can't use the 11 barrels?
He doesn't know which one.
You don't know.
No.
I mean, if you had marked the Yainesach and then put it aside before you got mixed up, but we're talking about when they got mixed up, that they don't know, can't recognize which one.
Right.
Okay. But not Yayin B'Yayin. If the wine has already been mixed together,
right,
then that law doesn't apply. Then there's nothing you can do about it. Okay. Ushmuel Omar, but Shmuel comes along and says, I feel a Yayin B'Yayin. Even the wine which is mixed with wine, which of course I don't have to tell you, is quite a revolutionary statement to me. Okay? Of course, all along, what have we said? Wine which is mixed with wine, kosher, right? Paul Schultz. The slightest amount of its Yainesach, right? Right. So, this is a very revolutionary statement.
But what is he saying now? He's saying...
Shmuel says, I feel a Yayin B'Yayin, because Rob said, it does not apply to Yayin B'Yayin, in other words, with wine mixed with wine.
Yeah.
But Shmuel was always disagreeing with Rob, or 99% of the time he disagrees with him. So he says, it's okay. What do you mean, okay? Probably what he's trying to say is it's okay if you follow what? The rule of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, right, to pour out a certain amount. Unlike Rav, who condemns the whole thing. Okay. Yochid Amar Rav Barachonov, that's what all those letters mean over there. Amar Rabbi Yochanan says, Afilu Yayin B'Yayin. Even wine mixed with wine. V'chein Omar Rav Shmuel Bar Nosson. Shmuel Bar Nosson said, and Omar Rav Echadnina, he also said, that Afili Yayin B'Yayin. V'chein Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rav Abuha, Afili Yayin B'Yayin. So they're all in agreement over here. So Omar Rav Nachman, Halacha L'maisa, says, the practical solution of the Halacha is as follows. Yayin Nesach, right, then B'Yayin also says, if it's a mixture of wine together, it's prohibited. Okay? But Chovis B'Chovis, but if it's a question of, you know, the barrels are sealed and they're mixed up, you don't remember which one, then Mutar. Then in that particular case, it's permissible along the lines of what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said. In other words, you have to throw out one that you don't know. I mean, it may be the Inessa, but the rest you can sell, okay?
Well, you don't know. How do you know?
Right.
How do you throw out?
One and throw it out?
Right.
Yeah. I don't understand that.
Huh?
No, you don't
throw
it out. You just deduct
the cost. Deduct
the cost.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
right.
You sell it to a guy.
Right.
Right. So right. Deduct the cost.
Yeah. Okay.
But correct. Okay, tonight is the 30th of January, the year 2008, and we are now about to start with a new Mishnah on Veda Zora, Daf Ayin Dalet, Omid Beis, right, on the top of the page. Okay. Alright, so this is what the Mishnah says. It says, Gas shel Evin, Shezif so Evin Kechavim, Minagbo the Hitahira. So far, so good. Now the question is, what do the words mean? And then we'll discover that it's not as simple as it seems. Okay? Alright. Gas is what you crush the grapes with. Okay? So, you know, the tool, the implement, whatever that you crush it with. I don't mean what to smash it with, but you know, it's the container into which you do it, okay? In other words, the system was something like this. You had the gas, then you either crushed it through treading it, or you crushed it by using, let's say, a heavy board or something in order to, crush the grapes, right?
A press,
okay. Then there was a pipe or a funnel or something that goes down into the bore that we were talking about all of last week, namely a cistern. So what is a cistern? It's like a big hole, but it's not just a hole. Yeah. Obviously, nothing is going to stay in the big hole if they don't do something in order to preserve. So usually what they did, you know, that they would... they would put, let's say, cement around it or something like that, you know, plaster, clay, something in order so that it should be able to hold more. Yeah. All right.
I mean, it was something really big.
Yeah, right. It was like a grid, big container in order to hold it, and then when they wanted to put it into the bottles, they had to dip into it and get it out, and either with a bucket or whatever it was, and so on, and then put it.
So this was
right.
Something could hold about 100 gallons.
It might.
This would be built into the ground.
In the ground, right. The bore was on the ground. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. But the gas was above ground.
The press was above ground, but the cistern was down. Yeah,
correct.
Yeah,
okay. All right. So this is the arrangement. All right. So, what the Mishnah says at the beginning is that if this gas is made of stone, then what did they do in order to try to make it more watertight? So the answer is that they would put pitch, they would smear the side with pitch. Okay. But I don't have to tell you, pitch doesn't do any, it doesn't enhance the flavor of wine.
Might it also
right,
have to
right,
be
right.
Would the pitch be porous?
Pardon me?
Would the pitch keep it from being porous?
Yeah.
That's
after all, what did Noah use in order to, he also used pitch in order to seal the ark so that it wouldn't leak.
Is it the stone that they're worried about, that porous?
But is the stone porous? That's the question. It's not as porous, obviously, as other things. Okay.
If enough water goes on it, it does pitch.
Oh. Right. So, in order to make sure, you know, so they smeared it with Zephyr's tar. Okay. And then, they would, according to Rashi, they would use a little wine in order to counteract the taste of the pitch, okay? So that when trapped grapes suddenly, afterwards, you know, so the taste already would not be affected by the pitch. This is the situation.
Would already be like that.
Right.
They seasoned it
right.
With wine already prepared.
Right, correct.
Seasoned it with wine.
Right, okay. All right, so that's the first part of line one. Okay. Now, the second part of line one says, what happens if it's an idolater who smeared it? And obviously, if he smeared it, what else did he do? He used a little wine, right? So now we have a problem. This Yain Nesach, right? I don't know what about, but it's there, okay? And what are you going to do in order to make it usable? So the Mishnah says Menagva, the Hitahora. In that case, you have to literally dry it, and then it becomes clean, okay? Now, the only problem is, the word Menagva really means to dry. But what does it mean? You just let it dry out? Is that the idea? So we'll discover later on in the Gemara that no, it's not as simple as all that. It's not just the question of letting it dry out, but you actually have to do more with it. And as we'll discover, that you have to really wash it, and you have to use ashes, sort of like a scouring powder. And that way you have to apply that in order to remove whatever possible traces there are over there. No, it wasn't simply.
It wasn't anything like
kashering. This is actually one of the steps in the kashering of that. It's exactly what it is. In other words, at this point, while we've been talking Yain Nesach all along, but we also know that from time to time we've had to talk about whether something becomes annulled, right? We've had to talk about what are different ways of koshering in order, to take care. So here's how do you kosher this particular goss, right? Yes, this...
kosher it
right.
Because of the pitch.
Right.
If it didn't have the pitch, then you couldn't because the wall absorbs the... it's like a dish.
Right, right. All right, so... Okay, so we'll see what they have to say about that in the discussion of the Gemara, because there are two different opinions that are going to be discussed. Okay?
So if you clean off the pitch.
Right.
If you take all the pitch off, then you can start it over again fresh.
Right, right. This is what it says right at this point. This is the point of view of the Mishnah, okay? But I just wanted to point out that the translation, he dries it out, is really a very inadequate translation. It's not really what we're describing over here. Scouring is a much more realistic interpretation of it, even though the word itself means to dry. Okay? All right.
What are we doing now?
We started the Mishnah on the top of Ayin Dalet. Right.
Turn one over.
Yeah, right,
so
right.
Talking about scouring in there?
Yeah. Wrong place?
Wrong place. This is where we are.
Oh,
right.
This is over here.
No, we finished
this one already?
Well, yeah, we finished that page last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You were half asleep.
Probably. Okay. Not half, probably all asleep.
Okay.
As long as I don't snore.
Right. All right. Now, what if the shell aids? What if it's made of wood, not stone? So Rabbi Omer, Yidagev. So Rabbi says, same process, all right? Scour it, okay? Chachamim Emrim, and they say, Kelef is hazefes. What you have to do is to peel off the pitch, okay? I don't know whether the Chachamim really are so much in disagreement with the other one, because if we say that Lanagev really is a different process, then it's not so much different than just peeling off. Just to peel off, nail it. Okay.
That's what Gary
right,
about removing the pitch.
But correct, right.
You're actually doing in both processes.
Yeah, right. Because, again, remember that the pitch contains some wine, since this was the wine that had been smeared by the idolater, so in that case you have this problem with Yain Nesach that's involved in it. Okay. Michel Harris. Now, what if it's made of pottery?
Pottery?
Yeah. You know what I mean. You know, like a vase.
Earthenware.
Earthenware, right. Okay, fine. No, so in that particular case, it says, afal pisha kolaf, it says, afis, arezu esu. Even if you would peel off the pitch, nevertheless, it still is prohibited. Because what is our general rule about earthenware that becomes treif? You can't use it. It can't be kosher. So the same rule, in other words, is being applied over here. Exactly. That's exactly what the story is. Okay. Yeah, Rashi explains, you know, Gash Shalevin, first of all, she's in Tzach HaKavim, right? He says, the urcha lemir may be chamra, they would put in a little wine, right? Porta, just a little bit, it says, right? Lavuri kutra de zivso, in order to remove the smell of the pitch, okay? Menachva, so he explains, before Ish Megamara, B'mayim, the Afer. So Rashi immediately jumps in to tell you that the Gemara later is going to tell you that what does the Nagev mean over here? It means you have to use water and ashes in order to scour it. So this is what it means. Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah, shalates, what if it's made of woods, as says Rashi? Diba'aya zephas tuba. It needs a lot more pitch than the stone in order, obviously, to try to make it, you know, more impermeable, right?
That's
the problem. Yeah, right. Yeah, shouldn't absorb as much. And therefore, it requires much more wine in order to absorb. So, Rabbi Yemer, so Rabbi says, Yenagev, Kishalevin, you do the same process that you did with stone, Rabbonim Pligi, but the rabbis are in disagreement. Michel Teres said, how about the earthenware? Afal Pi, Shekile, Fesazephus, even if he were to remove the pitch, Arezu, so it's prohibited. Why? Because of the Darkech, the Diviakolhi, that everybody is in agreement, the Mishum, the Cheres, Gufo, below Zivso, Bolalei Lechabra. In other words, even if there's no pitch on it or something like that, it's going to absorb wine. So that therefore, the earthenware you can't.
Be out of the earth.
Right.
Or throw it away anyway.
Exactly. So the Gemara continues, says, Omar Rava. So Rava says, Davka Zivso. Yeah. What we're talking about is if he speared some, you know, some pitch on it. Aval dorach bo lo. But if all that he did is to simply trample on the grapes in it, then he doesn't have to do it. So, obviously, there are going to be objections right now, right? Pshita zivso tenan. Obviously, we have learned that he, you know, in the Mishnah that says what? That he applied this pitch. Mahu de tema, what if you should argue? Hu hadin afilu derech bo, that this rule applies even if he treaded the grapes in it.
Talking about the idol worship.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily, but the question, but it was the guy who already did it, you know. Pardon me?
Coated.
It's got pitch.
Right. In other words, what we're saying, first of all, the first implication would be that if it had pitch, okay. If it didn't have pitch, then just treaded it without it, so he didn't have to go through this process, right? But now, they're arguing that maybe it means that even though you have pitch on it, and you treaded it, but still you have to go through this process. This is the question. Yeah.
But it's the pitch, not the treading, that creates the problem.
Right.
Now, when you say he treaded on it,
right,
what exactly are we talking about? His bare feet on the grapes or on this board?
Either way. Either way.
No, it's a mind.
Normally we think in terms that you step on it in order to crush it. Because the rock, you know, the fly sort of, but the stepping on it, right?
They would have a board, right. They would have a board, and
but of course, they also made use of boards and so on, exactly.
If there's no pitch right. inside, the, no pitch, it's anywhere, right?
Yes, they did.
Now, the problem is not the pitch, the problem is that they used wine in order to counteract the smell of the pitch. And if the wine was...
But if there's no pitch...
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what they say at the beginning, right? That it's no pitch, that you're just treading over there, that you don't have to go through this process. That's what they're saying, right?
Nothing to do with the idol worship at that point, right?
Right.
Did they wash their feet before they tread?
I hope that they did.
Probably not. And they had some flavor.
They didn't use their weight to step on a board. They actually get their feet into the grapes.
It could be either way.
It could be either way,
of course. Depends on how sanitary they were. I mean, remember the Italian pictures that they used to have back in the old days, right?
They didn't have FDA.
No. I remember in those days, you know, you'd see, Sophia Loren or something like that, stepping on the grapes. Okay.
Right.
So they say, look, we're learning about... where, you know, the pitch was applied, right? That's what the Mishnah talks about. And if you argue, he says, about the table, who had did that? It's likewise, I feel a dorachbo, that it applies even when he just trampled on it. The haidekatone, so this that we have learned, zifso. So why then do they say zifso? Right? They apply the pitch, he says. We're learning what is the common practice. How did they do it normally? Kamash Balad. The teacher said. All right. However, now comes a different point of view. Ikudi Amri, there are those who say, Omar Rava, it's not what Rava said that was first quoted, but he said something else. Omar Rava, he said, Dafka Zivsa, right? We're talking only in the Mishnah about that they applied the pitch, Avol Darachbo, but if he trampled on it, Lo Sage Lo Benigov, then it's not enough just to apply this method of scouring. You have to go beyond that. How? Well, it doesn't mention over here how, but obviously it would require a different method of kashering in order to make it kosher, okay? At this point, we haven't discovered what he wants to do with it. Yes. Any questions?
Yes. The point being that in the actual manufacture of the wine,
right,
they must not have an idolater involved in it at all.
It's correct.
To get right down to it.
So correct.
Because if he actually, even if he did the labor of treading,
It
would spoil the wine would be.
Okay. Now this raises the question about the kosher wines that we have. Okay. Until the invention of all the machinery that they use today, there was a question, you know, who do you have employed in the wine factory, you know, in order to qualify as kosher wine? Kedem always prided itself that they used only Shomer Shabbos people in order to work as their employees in the production of kosher wine. But others were accused of being a little bit more lenient. And this was particularly because there were some rabbis who were doubtful about the business of machinery or something like that. Today, I think that most of the work is actually done by machines. From the actual pressing of the grape to the collection and everything
and it's
else.
Boiled.
But that's another step.
Yeah.
Because today, most of the wines that we get in America are pasteurized. And the reason being, first of all, for health reasons.
Mavushal.
Right, Mavushal. But secondly, so that, you know, Goyim can handle it.
Yeah.
And we don't have to worry about that it's going to turn into Yayin Nesek by the stretch of the imagination. Okay? That's the basic reason. And of course, remember, we also talked several times already about Stab Yayin or Stab Yenon. You know, we're talking simply about Goyish wine today, which is not used, after all, for libations. But we Jews don't use it, period. So, that's the bison. Right.
I feel like half a bottle of
Birnbaum
wine together. Remember Birnbaum wine on the
Birnbaum?
Side?
Birnbaum?
Yeah.
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 You're not planning on drinking it, I hope.
Why? I keep it in the refrigerator. It's delicious.
How old is it?
How old is it?
It dates back to Napoleon's day.
But wine actually
wine is open. Once it's open.
It can and it can't. It depends on what conditions you keep it. Yeah.
You keep it cool and you keep it humid.
Right, right.
I
don't know if you remember.
Grape juice over here.
There was another winemaker on the Lower East Side by the name of Shapiro.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Shapiro's wine. So their slogan was Shapiro's wine. They can schneiden mit a Messer. In other words, it's so thick, right? Gedicht. Gedicht the wine.
But a man of Shevitz had extra heavy concrete.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Awful. Yeah. It is so sweet. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, you like it. Yeah, It didn't go well in my house.
My mother
used to. Yeah, well, a lot of people don't go in anymore for sweet wine.
No, my grandfather made wine. They didn't press it. They sugared it.
And
he had the barrel.
Yeah, I remember. We used to have also. We made wine several occasions, too.
My grandfather made it every place up until he got sick.
Yeah. I think it was for my David's bar mitzvah that we prepared. We had a jug of wine or something that we prepared. Right. But another experiment that we had, the making wine, all of a sudden little flies got in, so we threw out the whole batch.
What got into it?
Flies. Fruit flies.
Yeah.
Right.
My grandparents had a little back room.
Right. Okay, we'll begin later. Right. All right. So anyway, we see that the two people are quoting Rava, and their quotations are not in agreement. This is part of the problem. Okay.
This is a drying vine.
Right.
I don't know what the drying is.
Right. So, let's see.
Shall I let you in?
Hi.
Shall I let you in?
Oh. I don't know. The Hirschhorns haven't shown up yet. Yeah, so don't lock it yet.
What's going on?
Right. Yeah.
You had some dental work today.
What kind of dental work? Oh, you did?
David did. Yeah, your
dental. Oh, David Hirschhorn. Oh. Well, they were here for mental. Maybe they won't come. I don't know. But I had the impression they were here. Right. Yeah, she has your side for her mother's tonight. Okay.
Well,
yeah. Obviously. All right, so, Kahu, the also the Kabi in the Rabbi Chiya. It's like a case that came before Rabbi Chiya. A man came, said, Obole, and he said to him, Havli Gavro, says, get me a man, the Dochili Batsate, who can tread for me, or who can really clean for me. Dochi means to purify, right? My wine press. So Amalei the Rav. So he said to Rav, Zil Bahade. This is Rabbi Chiyu who says it to Rav. He says, all right, you go with him, okay? The Chazay says, and make sure the lo mitzavchas alive be midrash, and make sure that people are not going to talk about my decision, you know, my action, in the Beis HaMedrash. Or also he went Chazir Avu Shia Tefei, and he saw that he was yes, what a Shia over here. Hello.
Coding was smooth.
Right. It was very, very smooth. Right. It was extremely smooth. Right. Okay, right. So Omar, so he said, Oh, Vadai Bidnigo Sagane. He says, if that's the case, this, it's enough just to go through the process of scouring that we said. Right. The Ka'azel, the Osu. So while he was already walking or coming on his way, all of a sudden he took a look and saw Ka'azel. He saw that Filamitusa says that there were cracks underneath. The Ka'azel, the Havamole Chavon, he saw that they were full of wine. So Amar, so he said, Oh, Lois Sagame, there's so much wine over there that that you can't simply scour it. Elabek Kiluf. But what you have to do is to actually peel off everything on the sides. The Haidin de Omalei, and this is what he said to him, he said, Habibi, my uncle, he says, Chazi de Loi, Misafko Alai, Beibet Rasha. Now I understand why he says, I hope that they don't yell at me in the Beis Midrash. Why? Because first he said, all they have to do is to do the following, right? But then he saw it's more serious than that. So you have to use another process instead. But if people are unaware, you know, they only heard the first part of the business, then it would lead them to a false conclusion. That's the problem. So, that's the reason why he says, you know, that make sure, you know, that they don't talk about me, because they'll say, yeah, what does he know? He gave him the wrong advice, right? Tell him about it. Our sages have taught. Hagas, the habachatz, v'ashpech, shalev lekechovim. In the case of, first of all, the gas, as we already said, right? The habachatz. Machatz in Hebrew really means something that you use in order to, like a sledgehammer or something like that. Or in this particular case, what is the machatz? The machatz is, let's say, the board that maybe they use in order to pressure, you know, to bang on it in order to squeeze it out. And, pardon me? A ladle. All right, call it a ladle. And then the next thing, my eye keeps running around up and down all the time, right? Right. And, hold it. Yeah, I got some is the funnel. In other words, they have been used by Goyim, okay? So, Rabbi Bate ben Nikuv. So, what are you going to do with these things? So now, the gods we've already talked about, you know, that the opinion is that the Mishnah says, you know, that you have to peel it, right? When it's smeared with the pitch. All right, so that we know. But how about the other two things? Namely, the ladle, or whatever you want to call it, you know, the dipper, okay, and the funnel, the mashpeh is the funnel,
right,
that the goy has used. How can you convert them by making them fit for kosher? In other words, would they make it usher all the time, or is there something that you can do in order to fix it up?
The funnel and the dipper belong to the idol worship.
Right. And presumably he has used it.
Huh?
And presumably he has used it. Right.
His own purpose.
Right. I mean, if they're brand new, it's not such a problem. Although we'll learn a little bit later on that if it's brand new, but if it's a goyis, then what do you have to do? You should really take it to the mikveh and dip it. Right. Okay. The title. And we'll be coming to that idea.
How do you solve this problem?
So, at any rate, what does Rabbi say? Rabbi says, right, he says, it's okay that you can use them provided that you scour them first. Okay? I explained to you before at the beginning that nigav, even though technically it means drying, but that's not how they interpret. That's why we read the Rashi.